Welcome to the Trailline Podcast. The following episode is part of our mission to help educate and improve the systems of thousands of traders around the world. The podcast is brought to you by Traderline University, which features masterclasses and resources taught by world-class training experts and educators. For instance, you can sign up and learn swing trading directly from Oliver Kell, money manager and the U.S. Investing Championship record holder. You can also learn directly from market legend Stan Weinstein, in a one-of-a-kind stage analysis masterclass to master the system that Stan has used for decades to outperform and advise institutions. We also have specialized classes from Jared Tendler on trading psychology, John Boyk on the historical blueprint for trading success, and from the excellent lifecycle trade team of money managers who specialize in trading IPOs and super growth stocks. To join the thousands of traders who have improved their systems through our masterclasses, visit traderline.com or click the link down below in the description. Now sit back, relax, get your notebooks ready, and enjoy. All right, welcome back everybody to the Trailline Podcast brought to you by the Ultimate Trading Guide. You can pick up your free copy of that excellent resource down below, 100% free. Just click that link down below in the description. Joining us today is someone who I'm really excited to talk about. Andrew O'Connell is a full-time trader as well as a top performer in last year's U.S. Investing Championship with a return of 103.5%, I believe. So an excellent, excellent return. So Andrew, welcome to the show. Really great to have you on and looking forward to dive into your background, kind of your career so far as a trader, and talk through your overall process. So welcome, great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me on, Richard. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. To dive right in, let's kind of start at the very beginning. I'd love to hear how you first got interested in the markets and kind of your initial attempts to trade and invest and how everything kind of started for you.
Yeah, so this is gonna be a long and winding road, Richard. So basically, I started off as a trader that had immediately pretty strong results. So first 6 years profitable every year, I go full time after that and have some of the biggest struggles of my trading career. And then from there, I had to completely rebuild my system and I was able to put it all together. And that led to that 103.5% return in the US Investing Championship. But it all started off, I've always been very competitive. I've always been into sports. I played Division I tennis in college. And I had this delusional self-belief that I was going to be a professional tennis player. And it was around age 21, junior year of college, I realized, hey, I'm nowhere near this level. I need to reevaluate my life and I need to figure out something else that I'm going to do for a career. Around this same time, I'm an economics major and I'm also a finance double major. Mm-hmm. So I take a financial markets course in my junior year. And I'm listening to this course, and at a high level, I'm learning about the markets, and everything just starts piecing together for me, where I'm like, wait a minute. So this is essentially a puzzle game that everyone is playing. And if you work really hard and you get really good at this, you can make a living off of it. So to me, it reminded me just like tennis. And I immediately was like, okay, here we go. I'm pouring my whole life into this. Let's go. This is what I want to do with my career. So at that time, I really had no idea what I was doing. I started a brokerage account. I didn't even know where to go to learn about trading and investing. So I had a Wall Street Journal subscription. I had a Bloomberg subscription as well. And I basically just start intuitively trading the market based off of news headlines, current events, themes that are happening in the market. And I have some immediate success doing that. Around the same time, I end up linking up with one of my old tennis teammates that had already graduated. And he asked me, he was like, Andy, what do you want to do with your career, you know, after school? And I told him, I want to be a trader or a portfolio manager. And he essentially, you know, laughed at me. And he was like, Andy, you're not coming from a target school. You know, you don't really have any shot at getting that out of college. And he told me about the CFA curriculum. And he said, if you do this and you really want to learn, you really want to pursue that, you should go ahead and think about taking the CFA exams. So I immediately was like, all right, that's a done deal. I'm doing that. And I just started drinking from the fire hose of knowledge. So at this point, I have my Wall Street Journal, I have my Bloomberg subscription, and now I'm learning business analysis and fundamentals from the CFA exams. While I'm doing this, I'm just kind of developing this really unique trading style of event-driven trading. And in doing that, my first 6 years, I averaged about a 40% annualized return. I didn't have any down years, whether they were up or down in the overall market, and was just having a pretty smooth sailing experience. At this time, I'm doing maybe 10 to 30 trades a year. Nothing too crazy, not very high touch. I'm really just picking my spots and finding big themes. So, like, I was able to capture a Canadian cannabis legalization theme. I was able to capture a cryptocurrency theme back around like 2015, 2016, and just trading little earnings events, things of that nature. While I'm doing this, I'm starting to work up in my career. So I started off working at the Vanguard Group, got a job as a brokerage associate out of college. And that job was the best experience I could have had coming out of college. Basically, what we were doing was we were teaching retail clients how to use the Vanguard products and how to build portfolios. This is all passive investing, all very long-term stuff, and just get them set up for their retirement. I was able to parlay that into an equity analyst role there. So essentially, what I was doing was just preparing analytics for traders and portfolio managers. And I was just trying to sponge up as much as I possibly could doing that. From there, I was able to parlay that into a role on the fixed income trading desk at Vanguard. And that was an incredible experience. So I finally had like, my four monitor set up. I had a Bloomberg terminal. I had, subscription to Aladdin. And I was able to rotate to all these different desks that they had at Vanguard. So I was able to see like how are the index funds trading? What is it to actually trade a money market fund? Money markets are awesome. They're actually very fast paced to trade. And then I got to rotate through the active desk, emerging markets. I got to work with a lot of the derivatives products on the fixed income side. And I was managing the full trade life cycle. So doing a lot of portfolio analysis and then also the trade analysis. I got to do a stint in credit research, really just a very varied experience. So an opportunity comes up for the investment management development program. And this is essentially a bunch of Ivy League college kids, Harvard kids, MIT, all that good stuff that are coming into Vanguard, and there's one internal hire that gets selected. And there's maybe like 10 or 20,000 employees at Vanguard, so a pretty competitive process. I end up getting picked as the sole candidate internally for the program. So I'm thinking like this is going to be great. I already have so much experience on the trading floor and I have so much context. I'm going to get to rotate through trading, risk management, like all these different groups, quantitative equity group, all this good stuff. I end up getting kicked out of the program before the program even starts. So apparently I've been essentially with Vanguard, there's all these like compliance restrictions. And this is really anywhere in asset management where you essentially can't trade your own personal account. I had been doing a lot of active trading on my own. And essentially, long story short, I got kicked out of the program for a trade I made $22 on. So it was a rough experience. Around this time, I start looking at what I'm doing in my own trading. And I start looking and I'm like, hey, I'm making almost as much for my trading as I am for my day job. And I just got kicked out of this program. This is, potentially the perfect time to go off on my own and start doing my own trading. So that's what I end up doing. I end up quitting Vanguard. I start off full-time trading. And this is where things start to go off the rails, Richard. So essentially what I did, originally I was doing event-driven trading, very low-touch stuff, as I had mentioned, trading these big themes. When I went off on my own, I joined a proprietary trading firm. And it was one of these, I'll call it a bucket shop, where they load you up with some buying power. There's like an expensive training program. It was a good learning experience, but yeah, they take some of your upside, all the downside is on you, that sort of thing. But in doing this, I was able to learn technical trading. Up until this point, I had never used charts whatsoever. I was able to develop a trend model that I still use to this day, which is essentially just telling me, hey, what's the trend of the market doing? Is this a safe environment to be trading the long side, or is it safer to be either neutral or trading the short side? I end up doing that. But essentially, what I did, I had this mindset of like, now I need to do cash flow trading and I need to be consistently profitable and I need to make money every single month, which is not what I was doing all these years
Beforehand.
prior. So, yeah, in doing that, things really started to break down. I essentially said, like, I'm no longer going to use fundamentals or use the news. I'm just going to trade off of the chart. I joined Twitter. I had never been on social media. I was not really used to all that exposure to all these different ideas and strong opinions. And I ended up having some really, really low moments over the course of 2 years. And it was essentially a rock bottoming process where you think you've hit rock bottom, and then there's another layer below that and another layer below that. So some of these extreme moments, they include, at one point I was denied for a personal loan. At one point, I had to take a second job waiting tables just to make ends meet and take some of that pressure off of my trading. And it was a really rough couple of years. I end up just coming to this realization, like, I need to flip this around and I need to think deeply about what I was doing in the past that was working and what I'm doing now. And I realized that, hey, I should go back to position trading, which is what I was originally
The
very
longer
good
term
at.
style. Yeah.
The longer term style, it just more naturally fits my personality, my psychology. And hey, maybe I should start incorporating the news again. Maybe I should start incorporating fundamentals, but maybe now I can pair this with a lot of the technicals I've learned and a lot of these quantitative techniques that I've learned. And essentially, I built a new trading strategy that leverages a lot of these different disciplines and goes back to my roots as well. And I was able to do that. And that ultimately led to putting things back together, achieving some good trading results, and eventually getting that 103.5% return in the 2023 USIC.
Yeah, perfect. And I want to take a step back just for a second to your experience working for Vanguard. And I want to ask, what skills did you develop? What did you learn at all those different places that you were at? What concepts did you bring from that into the world of trading that and the process and system you use today? Were anything that really carried over or any like key lessons that you learned throughout all those different experiences at those different jobs?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it is just getting context. So, like, for example, learning a lot about the fixed income market. Like, there's, for the most part, there's a lot of equity traders that they're not really paying any attention to the bond market, and they're not really paying any attention to the currency market either. And a lot of these moves that are happening in equities, they're really originating in the bond market and in the FX market. So it was just nice to get, a very holistic view. Also, as well, just seeing how process driven everything is on the institutional side. So, like, every trade is very documented, everything is very process oriented. And yeah, there's no really just like trading something willy nilly. Like, everyone has strategies, everything needs a strategy tag. And then the other thing that I realized as well is there's a lot of people out there that say, like, oh, there's no way you can compete with the smart money. There's no way you can compete with the institutions. Like, they're so much smarter. You're just outgunned and outmanned. And I think I realized as well that that's not always necessarily the case. So I think the big advantage that retail traders have is that a lot of us are very passionate about the market. And that's a huge advantage because we might be willing to, look at charts every night, keep up to date with the market. We might be willing to do some market research. And a lot of traders on the institutional side, they're really doing it as sort of like a 9 to 5 gig, and they don't have that same level of passion. And then the other big learning as well was just that for big institutions, they're creating these moves in the market. So to be honest, I think the bigger your capital stack is, the more you really have to pay attention to fundamentals and you have to pay attention to macro because you don't necessarily have like the chart, you're creating the chart. So it's just a very different game, the institutional side versus the retail trading side.
Yeah, and I want to ask you a little bit about that and your first year's trading where it's much more event driven and all of that. Not using charts. How did you define your entries if you weren't really necessarily looking, to buy a breakout or buy a pullback? And a lot of what previous guests have talked about, and you may use more today, pairing everything together. But yeah, how are you kind of defining your entries, those first few years while you're trading?
Yeah, that's a great question. So today I'm using the chart, using the technicals, using the stage analysis, bringing all that together. But back then, man, what I was doing, like I had the iPhone app, which is like the stocks app. And although I was not looking at charts, I was looking at prices every day. So I would just look at the prices and be like, oh, okay, Apple's typically trading in, this range, 100 bucks to 110 bucks or whatever it might be. And I was just kind of like intuitively and in my brain, just storing these prices and just seeing when there's big deviations of those prices. A lot of what I was doing as well was just seeing like, are investors panicking here? Like looking like, oh, okay, the VIX is pushing 20. And like we're just seeing very extreme movements and things like that. And really, I think what I was doing is just kind of using psychology. And at that time, like, it's not like I needed the money for my trading to live. So that's a huge thing. If you have other streams of income where you're not relying on that trading revenue, then you're just going to be able to sit back and really observe the auction. And you can see when other players are getting euphoric or they're panicking. And a lot of times you can take advantage of those situations.
Yeah, and I want to also ask, given your sports background, if there's anything that you've kind of taken from that context to transition over to, trading and all of that, because like you said, there's a lot of psychology that goes into it. There's a lot of parallels that I see, but I'd love to hear kind of your perspective of, any of the key skills that you learned as an athlete, put it, the discipline needed to get to that high level of playing in college that you've kind of transferred over.
Yeah, so it's all interrelated. And what's crazy, Richard, is like I see parallels between trading and sports. I can find parallels between trading and like almost everything in life. Like it's really weird. I think almost everything on this planet is working in fractals, but essentially, like, it obviously takes hard work and dedication. So that's one thing. Like sometimes I'll encounter traders that like obviously they want to make a lot of money, but they don't really want to work hard. And that's something from the sports realm where that's just not possible at all. Like, if you want to be at an elite level or at a high level, you know that every day that you're not working, there is someone else that is honing their craft and they are working at it. So it is very important, especially at the beginning, to just have a very high baseline and just say, like, hey, I'm going to work hard at this. The thing that's quite different is that in sports, sometimes you can win by just saying, like, I want this so badly. And the other person I'm playing against, like, they don't want it as badly as I do. So I'm going to will myself to win. Whereas in trading, it's actually quite different, where like your will to win has nothing to do with your results. It's really just your execution and your technique. Like, it is what it is. You can't wish yourself to, a trading victory. It's really just like your process has to be very clean and that's it. So that's the main difference. So I think you have to work hard, but it's very similar in tennis. There would be times where like you want to win so badly that you end up just kind of like seizing up and you can't really take advantage of the opportunity. In trading, it's the same thing. So what I found over time is it helps for me. Like, I'm someone that's very laser beam focused. I'll spend 20 hours on something a day if I really want it. So it is very important for me as I've progressed in life to just realize like it makes sense for me to have multiple passions that I'm really interested in because I like when some of my other passions actually pull me away from trading. So it's counterintuitive, but the more other things you have going on in your life, I think it'll be easier to get better results.
Yeah, it gives you a break and it gives you a little perspective. A little bit of perspective as well at the same time, which is so true. And one thing I was thinking about recently regarding sports and trading, was I was thinking about how, these top traders, Mark Minervini, David Ryan, Oliver Kell, whatever, whoever it may be, they can execute and it just kind of looks effortless. They see something that you might not see, But, you know, behind that one trade is the years of work that they put into the dedication, the showing up every day. And it's the same thing in sports. Like, I've kind of dabbled with a little bit of rock climbing, bouldering the past few years since I've moved to Seattle. And you see people who have obviously been doing this for 10 years, doing these crazy dyno moves, you know, amazing, amazing stuff. But that's just one move or one route that they're doing. And you don't see the time where they were the beginner, where they were just climbing, you know, the beginner walls, building up that foundation that then they could go on with the skills that they learned to execute at that higher level. So that's just something that I've been kind of thinking about the you know the past few days since going rock climbing again. I wanted to also ask you, you know, it seems like you're pretty much self-taught. Were there any resources, books, other than, you know, it sounded like the program that you went through at the prop trading firm. Were there any other resources that you went to kind of help educate yourself and help you along your way as you're building that new system for yourself?
Yeah, so a lot of people are looking for like a magic resource and like, what's the best way to start learning? And sometimes they might, like the CFA curriculum, for example. That was like 1,000 hours of studying. There's like little gems within that curriculum that I actually use in my trading and investing, but a large portion of it I do not use. But I don't think that means like, oh, it's not worth it to do. So I think when people are learning, they just have to realize like, if I spend 1,000 hours trying to learn, there might only be like 50 hours of that 1,000 where I'm actually picking up gems. But you still have to put in that 1,000. So I think some of the ones that have really helped me, the CFA curriculum definitely just for understanding businesses and the fundamental analysis. One that really helped me when I started getting more into like the Can Slim and adding that to my tool belt was just Mark Minervini's books. I believe it's like Trade Like a Stock Market Wizard. He says this, and I believe it's 100% true. There are some books like his book that I think it's better to take that book and read it 10 times in a row. And maybe you're just like, I'm going to read this book, once a month I'm reading it and going that route versus picking up like 1,000 different books with all these different styles. So I think his books are fantastic. And then another one that I really liked as I was getting more into the technicals and learning about the auction. Jim Dalton has a book. It's called Markets in Profile. And that is a really good one for some detail work and just understanding how these auctions are working at a very micro level.
No, that's good. And I also wanted to dive a little bit deeper into the period where you started trading on your own full time and experienced a lot of difficulty. Can you kind of give some perspective? You know, what do you think was going wrong during that time? What were the problems that you're making? You know, what was the extent of the drawdowns or mistakes that you were experiencing? Because I know, you know, every single trader goes through a period where they're not trading well. Maybe it's their first bear market, their first nasty correction, where they experience a drawdown that they never seen before. It's very relatable to everybody, I'm sure, watching this. So take us through that period, what you were thinking, and you know, yeah, what were you struggling with during that time?
Yeah, so it still crushes me to even talk about it, but it's just worth discussing. So like what I really had a tough time with was when I went full time, it was like, okay, before I was spending maybe like 4 hours on the market a day because I had like a very busy 9 to 5 schedule. Now I have a full 24 hours. So that must mean like now that I'm a full-time trader, I should be looking at the screens all day, every day. And like I should be looking at the futures trading at night and all this stuff. So my screen time jumped up dramatically. And really how that impacted me was before I could be very objective and like, oh, maybe I'm checking the market a few times a day and like I see what's happening and I have a good perspective on what's going on. But what happens is like if you start looking at the screens like 24/7, one day passes and it feels like you've had like 20 trading days all in one. So when you start doing that, like I always caution people against this because let's say you put in like 10 hours a day for 2 months straight, you're going to have periods where you make no money for months and months on end. So if all of a sudden you're putting in these 10 to 12 hour days and you're looking at your account, you're going like, I just got no return from this. And I was spending all this time every single day, or like what was happening to me, I'm actually losing money and I'm spending all this time every single day. So that's where you can burn out. And I think that's where most people end up quitting trading because they invest all this time, they treat it like it is a 9 to 5, and they're expecting the cash flow stream to look like a 9 to 5 cash flow stream. And it's just not. Like for a while, I was like, what does it mean to be consistently profitable? I'm like, are there people that are consistently profitable? And when I first started, like I was thinking it's consistently profitable on like a day-to-day basis or like on a month-to-month basis. And now my understanding of consistently profitable is I think if you're really good at trading, you could make money almost every year, but it's, on a yearly basis, or like you make money every, in a 5 year span, you're making money 4 out of those 5 years or something like that. Like it has to be thought of in years and, decades even. But this idea of like I make money every single day trading, like it just doesn't exist. So that was all those concepts, those were the things that really hung me up. And then also, like I had never been on social media up until this point. I jumped on there. You start looking on it and you start thinking everyone else is, making all this money and like you're not. You start comparing, and every day there's going to be someone that catches that big winner of the day. So it's kind of like a, it's like torture almost, just if you spend too much time on it. So yeah, I started doing that as well. And I faced some really big drawdowns. Again, like I, throughout my prior process, I was only using the chart and I was trying to like buy breakouts in stocks that like I had never even heard of. And yeah, it just didn't really like fit with my personality. I faced huge drawdowns. I blew myself up multiple times over the course of just a few year span. And just turn into like from someone that was consistent year over year to someone that was just like completely booming and busting all the time. So it was a very tough experience.
So now let's talk a little bit about the happier period, the turnaround here. What did it kind of take to get to that point where you realized you needed to make a change, and how did you kind of set yourself up starting to build a system that fits more with what you're doing in the past, the event-driven stuff, which I know you've got actually a few resources prepared today to share with everybody. But yeah, talk me through creating that new system, building something that works more with your style, how you like to approach things. How did you start it, right from square one?
Yeah, so it really just started off with a rock bottom moment where it was just I need to do something different here. Like this is not working. I'm going to keep getting the same results if I keep going into the market with the same package. And so I had to think back to like what was I doing when I was just crushing the market every single year? And what I had to do was essentially like from the trading side and actually like building a strategy, I was using a trend model and I was not always sticking to the model because I was saying like, oh, I need to make money this month. So like, oh, the trend model just flipped negative, but like here I go, like I'm just going to try trading from the long side. So part of it was behavioral and it was just like, let me start thinking about this, for the long haul again. And that just came from, losing money so much where you just start thinking like, I need to stop doing these destructive behaviors that are just causing me to fall. I went back to position trading. So I just kind of realized like those people that are good at day trading and, they're going in and out. Like in the years where I wasn't doing well, I was looking at my statements and like 1 year I had over 500 trades. I was like, geez, I traded over 500 times and like I didn't even make money. So I just came to this realization like I need to reduce my trade significantly. And I think almost anyone can benefit. Like if you take the number of trades that you're doing and you take that number, multiply it by 0.5, cut it in half, and you say, I'm going to try to trade half as many times as I did in the prior year, it's just going to naturally lead to being more selective and, if you do less trades, you're going to lose less trades. And I hate the feeling of losing. So it was definitely just a lot better reducing the frequency. I also reduced my screen time dramatically. And this was like the best thing ever. It's like the ultimate hack. So, like, I have very detailed research that I do in the evening. And that research process usually takes me about like 2 hours at night. Then I do some research in the morning. Like, I look at all the overnight news and I just kind of see like what happened overnight. Is there anything I need to be concerned about? And during market hours, I really consider that like my danger zone. Like, that's where I could really hurt myself. And so now I just check into the market. Like, I'm usually watching the open. I'll watch like the first 30 minutes of the action and I'll check in at lunch. Maybe just update my models, like observe what's going on, that sort of thing. And then I tune back in for the close. So I'm maybe spending like an hour and change during the market hours. And that is really like the ultimate hack. Just not being like sitting looking at the chart and just hoping it moves. And yeah, so it was a lot of those behavioral things that really turned it around. And just staying in the game longer, then naturally you start to develop more, better trading setups. You start to pick things up. You watch videos like this. I watched a bunch of your videos. You start to pick things up. And just by surviving long enough, then you can start like actually putting these things into your game. And that's when you can start doing pretty well.
Yeah, and I think that key change, trading less, I think regardless of your style, like you said, it's going to help you. Like even if you're a day trader or swing trader, a lot of the trades are going to be scratches or quick stops and that type of thing. And I've from a lot of the people, a lot of the traders who I've talked to, they often point to that as, as they refine their system, they're trading less, they're doing less, they recognize more the environment where they make the most amount of their money, the Pareto principle. And that's when they focus on. But other than that, like I think, it's a common thing in the CAN-SLIM methodology that there's kind of often three good periods each year. Sometimes we get a little bit more, sometimes we get less. Who knows how long those periods are? But the rest of the year, it's probably good to be pretty much sitting out for the most part or doing a lot less. So like that. And I want to ask you, last year, do you know off the top of the head, top of your head, how many trades you made during that year? Because if your goal is to trade less, I'd be curious to hear that number.
Yeah, so last year I had less than 100 trades, which for me was good. Like I said, in prior years I had done like 500, then I whittled my way down to 300. Last year I did even less, and my goal for this year is to do even less than that. So yeah, I really think like my view has changed a lot. It used to be like, you just want to make the most money possible. Like that's when you're really killing it. But I also think it's like if you can put up some pretty good returns, and it takes you fewer movements to do that. That's like a whole nother level of just like excellence. Like if you have to like be slaving at the desk and you got to make like 1,000 trades and whatever, like it's just less fun. So it really becomes a game of like, how can I become more of a sniper and less of just like a machine gun, like spraying everything around? So yeah, I just want to keep reducing that number and reducing that number.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to dive more into now the event-driven side of things, because we talked about earlier in a prior call that that's kind of a core part of your process is identifying big themes, big events, big stuff that because group moves. So I'd love to dive into that. I know you've got a presentation to share, so I don't know if you want to do that now, but I'd love to hear more about how you approach that side of things because we all know that the best moves come from seeing that bigger picture, where are the institutions flooding, an idea, a group of ideas with capital that create those nice trends that we can ride. So yeah, I'll leave it to you to take it away. Perfect.
Okay, very cool. So this was last year we had the regional banking crisis, and it was everyone was going crazy over this. Like sometimes I just like as well like the market culture and like how we're all experiencing these things together. Like I just find that very cool. So like we'll always remember in 2023 this crisis. But how I approach this is when there's moments of crisis and investors are panicking, it can usually lead to an opportunity. So for this particular trade, I'm just going to jump over to the Western Alliance chart. We had the crisis. Basically, we were seeing a massive deposit flight from regional banks. So the concern was like, oh my gosh, these guys, all their assets are tied up in weird ways. Depositors are fleeing. Like, it's essentially like a bank run scenario. So one of the key elements of this trade was that the correlations went to one. And what I mean by that is like you can see this massive waterfall on the Western Alliance chart. Like, this is just ridiculous. If you've been looking at charts for any amount of time, like, this is clear panic. And correlations going to one is a big deal because it essentially means that investors are treating every single security within a group the same way. And we all know in reality, if you just take one step back, there's going to be some banks that are doing way better than the others, right? There's going to be some that are really in trouble. They're at the epicenter of the problem. And then there's going to be a few gems in there that they're unscathed. So it is very important when one of these events happens, you don't want to jump in and just hero trade it and just start buying these things because you can really hurt yourself like in this waterfall. But essentially, what I was doing is I was watching this unfold, kind of sitting on the sidelines. And I was just tuning in to what was happening. And I'm by no means a regional bank expert or anything like that. But what I ended up seeing was after this huge waterfall, I'm monitoring the price action. We get this news story that comes out. I still remember, I was actually on my way home from the gym. I was listening to Bloomberg, and a headline pops up. And it's basically saying, hey, Western Alliance just puts out a note. And they're essentially saying here, we actually had deposit inflows. So everyone's worried about these outflows, right? This bank says, hey, we're in good shape. We're taking in inflows. So look, you can see here total deposits were approximately blah, 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 with quarter to date deposit growth of 1.8 billion. So it didn't really take being like a regional bank expert. It was basically just, hey, this stock sold off, correlations went to one, but it's actually not impacted. So most likely, this thing is going to trade to the upside. So I saw this headline and I immediately knew that I was going to trade Western Alliance that day. So I started seeing the thing move up in the pre-market. I see here as I'm just preparing myself for the trade, like, okay, this thing has already made a panic low. We see the volume has gone crazy. And now it's getting a little bit more quiet. The volume is drying up a little bit more. Okay, we've got some levels here to potentially trade against. So I end up putting out an order, and this is in the pre-market after seeing that headline. Another thing that I pride myself on as well is if you can see a headline and you can respond to that headline in less than 5 minutes with a trade idea, that is when, you're really hitting your stride in this sort of like news-driven, event-driven trading. So for this one, yeah, my order went out on the open. I got executed. And you can see, this thing just had a pretty fantastic run from here. Now, if I just had my CanSlim hat on, which I love CanSlim trading, like I would obviously never trade this. But this was a situation where that news hits. I know from my experience on the institutional side, like there are going to be people that buy this thing, but I'm a small, nimble retail trader. So it's going to take them so much longer to get that position on. And it's very similar to like a power earnings gap, which I know you're familiar with, where you're taking advantage of, the speed that you have as a retail trader. So yeah, for this one, ended up entering this thing, and the trade just immediately worked. Within days, this thing is moving to the upside, and this was one of my big trades for 2023. So yeah, this one, I ended up taking this off up here in around like the 35 area. And you can see this thing, even beyond where I took the trade off, it still had a lot more room to run it, and it ended up doing very well. But for me, for a trade like this in a banking crisis, and I don't know, I'm not a regional banking expert, this was like more than enough for me. I just clipped the trade off.
Yeah, so a few questions here. First, looking at this trade, and once you've identified the news event, you know you're going to trade the name, you've got your entry planned. How are you managing risk in a case like this? Because obviously you look to the left in the chart. There's been moments where it's still in waterfall. Like you said, we recently had that kind of reversal extension waterfall moment just a few days prior, kind of the second kind of waterfall. Now it's stabilized a little bit, but obviously there is still that risk given that's a news event. How are you managing risk in this scenario? Is it with the stop loss, alerts? What's your process for all of that?
Yeah, so for this one, it's kind of like a multi-pronged approach. So I always like having my hard stop in place. So for this one, the stop that I was using was the bottom of this green candle from a couple days back. So I was giving myself some room on this one. But to be honest, like this is a situation where if the trade doesn't work that day, that's what I love about event-driven trades as well. That,
Quick feedback.
yeah, quick feedback. Like if you got that good news and the thing is still falling like a rock, I'm out because I've done this the right way and I've done it the wrong way. And yeah, you just have to be out. So what I like is you can get a really nice tight stop on your trade. You get the immediate feedback and you can just be out. And the other good thing as well is like what I've noticed is when good news comes out about a company, let's say even if the trade doesn't work, generally the thing doesn't just like flop out of bed to the downside and vice versa if there's bad news too. Like so yeah, these kinds of trades, they can be pretty forgiving. But yeah, in a banking crisis, like you have to be ready to be wrong on something like this.
Yeah, and then just looking at the following days after that, looks like the next day it was kind of a tight consolidation day, still making progress there. And then that next day you really get momentum to the upside. Did that cause you to move up your stop loss at all? How did you kind of manage risk as the trade progressed, and what was kind of your goal in terms of your profit target? You mentioned already where you kind of exited, but what was your kind of thought process throughout the life cycle of this trade?
Yeah, so my objective for this trade, if you look at my charts, and I mentioned the book Markets in Profile earlier, I have this indicator on my TradingView charts, and it is painting these monthly value areas for me. So what I love is when I entered this trade, this one was trading just below this box, which is the monthly value area. And so my objective immediately becomes, okay, let's see if we can take this thing to the top of value. So the market profile, like I just find it's a really good way to sort of like organize your trading and it can help with your risk management, setting the profit targets as well. So that was the goal. So I took a big piece of this trade off when we hit that top of value and I pieced out of this in three parts. And I believe I ended up taking off the final piece right up here. And then, yeah, this thing still had a lot more in the tank, but that was, for the people that really know the regional banks. The other thing too is once I get this trade on, then I started doing more research into the company and like what does their balance sheet actually look like? And like do they hold these like toxic loans and whatever? To be honest, I don't know if that's giving me any additional edge in the trade like at all, but I just find it helps me to mentally stay in there if I'm just picking up intelligence on what's happening as I'm in the trade.
Yeah, and just to clarify a point, so did you move your stop loss up at all throughout the trade? Like, was there a point where you moved to break even, then a little bit in profit, just to make sure you got something out of the trade once it started working for you, really?
No, for this one, it just happened so fast. And the other thing too is like, I'm thinking like, look at where Western Alliance was like a couple months ago. This thing was at $70. And then we find out Western Alliance has been a beneficiary of this regional banking crisis. So that's where for me personally, if I was just technical trading and I was just looking at the chart, I don't really think I would have like any confidence in here. And maybe I would take it to the top of value. Like, trust me, like you can do it with just the technicals, like people do it just fine. But for me personally, I like having that context of like, wait, so this thing was just at 70 and now it's taken in even more assets. So like if it starts working for me right away, I'm not getting that feeling of like, oh shoot, like I need to peace out of this. Like I'm actually trying to stay in like as long as I can, but because I didn't know, I'm not a regional bank expert, like I actually took this thing off. I probably could have rode it even longer and longer. So, yeah, if it was something I didn't know as much about, that's where, like, as soon as this thing works, like, I'm thinking about moving up my stop and just trying to, like, go about it that way.
Yeah, and what kind of position sizing were you using during this trade? And maybe taking a step back just for everybody watching, what's kind of your overall process for deciding how much to risk and how much to size a position?
Yeah, so for overall position sizing, if I'm using a broad-based ETF, like I say if I'm just using SPY, I'll throw 100% of my account in a broad-based ETF, no problem. As it starts to work its way down to less liquid stocks and just things that are smaller cap in nature, that sort of thing, that's where my position sizing just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So for this particular trade, I wanted to get as much size in this thing as possible. Like I felt the edge was there. All the elements were there. I thought it was an A plus. And for this one, I ended up going with a 20% position size in my mind. But I was thinking, like, I think this is A plus. I think this thing could double. But on the downside, like, what happens if this thing loses 50% of its value in like a gap down scenario? Like,
Right.
you just never know. So I thought 20%, if I lose 50% immediately, I just took a 10%
Haircut, yeah.
10% haircut, whatever the math is. Like, I was like, I can live with that because that's the most important thing. Like, when you get it where everything lines up, you have to size in if you want to get a good return. But it's really all about psychology, where it's like, what level of drawdown do you feel comfortable with? Like, can you take heat or can you not take heat? And it all just depends on your own personal psychology. So what I've found, Richard, is I think I do my best, even if it is an A plus trade, if I go to a max of 25%. I find if I go above that, like which I've done in the past, like, oh, I'm pushing 40%, I'm pushing 50% in one stock. Psychologically, I don't trade it as well. I'll start to, just cut it off too early. Like I will mess the thing up. But what I find is like if it's a really good opportunity, I can get up to 25% and I can still trade it okay.
Yeah, makes sense. And it's interesting how this kind of lines up with some other kind of traders who I've talked with. For instance, we were doing the master class with Stan Weinstein, and something he had developed over the past, in recent trading was this kind of 4B minus setup, where, and he actually used the regional banks as the example. And the 4B minus setup is basically a stock has really taken a hit. It's been in a stage four for quite some time, and then it kind of has a waterfall moment where it gets hit even further. It makes what is a likely low for that cycle. And then he's looking for an entry near that declining 50 SMA as it kind of forms a base, pops through that, which would be kind of in that area there. So it's interesting how and I think he used the example right around that time, May, June of last year. So yeah, it's just interesting how things line up. Even with these type of trades, which aren't kind of classic trend following, stage analysis, there are obviously other setups, other ways you can take advantage of these type of moves.
Yeah, another thing that I really like is when you have multiple monthly value areas, these could be weekly value areas as well, whatever time frame you like trading on. When you have multiple and they're overlapping like this, when you get a break out of that base, like over here, like I was not in the trade for this segment, but yeah, there's a good trading opportunity here because you've got multiple overlapping value areas and then you get the breakout. So yeah, it is. It kind of overlaps a little bit with like the stage analysis with the trend trading as well.
Yeah, that concept is kind of like there's like a base on base. There's just like a lot of it's like coiling and coiling and coiling. Very cool, very cool. One question I wanted to ask, and something that I wrote down before because I was really curious about event-driven trading, is how do you filter out the noise to find the news events or the events that actually matter and can produce a meaningful trade, something that can last days, weeks, months, and produce those trends. How do you find those versus just something that ends up not really contributing to anything and maybe even is a negative news event, sell the news, that type of thing? Do you have any kind of clarity there in terms of what you found to work over time?
Yeah, I found you have to be a sponge. Like, I just think the more you read, the better off you're going to be. And like, for example, like I think that's where maybe the CFA curriculum helps me because I understand like these drivers, evaluation and all that good stuff. So like what I find is if there's a headline that translates to a big revenue increase for a company, like if it's like, oh, they just opened up a new business line or something like that, and you look at the TAM of that business and it's huge or whatever it might be. Like those are usually good earnings events. Like anything that you think could materially impact the actual underlying business helps. And then what I think also helps is then if you start marrying the technical analysis in with it. So like in this particular example, we get a headline that shows, hey, this is going to dramatically improve. Or it has an impact on the fundamentals of the business, right? Like they're taking in deposits. But then you look on the technical side, the fundamental person's not always going to see this. The stock was just at 70, and now it's over here at 26. And the fundamentals could actually be better than where they were when it was at 70. So having a sense of the technicals can help you, even if you're looking at like a fundamental catalyst.
And I also want to ask you, are there any kind of key themes that come to mind over the recent years that you've traded that might be helpful for people watching to go back and study, looking at how these group moves developed? I don't know if you have a list of, five or so that might be worth taking a look at.
Yeah, so I have one that's somewhat similar. This is the other one that I have prepared. And this one over here, this is the Bitcoin chart. So this is again like one could argue Bitcoin doesn't even have fundamentals, right? But I see this setup as a fundamental setup. So to just take a step back here, there was a huge crypto bear market in 2022 when rates started going up. The theory is, hey, these assets, they have no intrinsic value. So, like, let's just dump these things. There was an FTX scandal, you name it. These things, they were just in a clear downtrend, right? And it just looked absolutely horrible. Around this time, we have investors saying, like, oh, crypto, like, it's just totally dead. The whole thesis behind the monetary network, like, it's just done. But this headline right here, BlackRock announces partnership with Coinbase. And so this is even a little bit different. It's not necessarily fundamentals, but I remember from my experience working on Vanguard's trading desk, I used to use the Aladdin software. We would run money off of that. And I just had a good understanding of what that platform is, what you can do on it. And it's essentially institutions run money out of this platform. I took a deep dive into this story when it came out, and I immediately put this on my chart. And essentially, what that means when they did that partnership, BlackRock was making it so that investment managers could transact in cryptocurrency on their platform, Aladdin. So I started thinking to myself, like, how much money is run through Aladdin? And I did some Google searching and I got some numbers off the top of the head, and it was like trillions of dollars that are being run on Aladdin. So suddenly, this idea of institutions coming in and all that stuff. Like a lot of times people would hear that and they'd be like, oh, dream on, that's not happening. But here it's literally like concrete evidence that that is going to happen. So again, it's kind of like a fundamental story, but then the technicals come into play as well, where it's like, hey, really what we're after is more money coming into the asset that we own. So in this particular example, we got that headline. But that was not necessarily the entry, because you can see like this thing still had, more downside left in the tank. You could have just entered this thing right on that headline, you still would have been fine. But for this one, the old me would have just been buying here on this headline. But after learning a little bit more about technical analysis, I just put this one on the radar at that point. And then I think the real good buying opportunities. We're right around here at the beginning of 2023, as we were inside of this yearly value area, that was the big opportunity. So I ended up piecing into this, a couple different times using some good technical entries, but I really had this fundamental catalyst that was backing me. So the other good thing is like, if you see that fundamental catalyst, now boom, I'm going to start watching this thing for like a nice can slim trading setup, and if and when that appears, then I'll go for it. So another completely different example, but there's just some signs that things are happening here. And this thing went for a pretty crazy run.
Yeah, for sure. And were these two trades or two themes, the Bitcoin theme and the regional banks, were those the two biggest drivers of your performance last year?
Yeah, so I started trading the Bitcoin theme pretty heavily in the fall. And I had some good trades in MicroStrategy. And MicroStrategy had a really good CAN/SLM setup. So let me go over to MicroStrategy.
Yeah, let's bring that up.
This was the big trade that I did last year in MicroStrategy. So we've got that Bitcoin theme. It's starting to build momentum throughout the year, right? And MicroStrategy over here in July, I was not actually a part of this move. So like this one, I saw it go. And that's another big thing. Like I miss so many trading setups. Sometimes there'll be A plus setups where I just don't take it. For whatever reason, it doesn't feel right. The market doesn't look right. So anyway, this thing had a great sequence right here. You see the thing had a really big advance, consolidates, moves sideways, and then it had a very big run. Now over here we can see it had a pretty big correction. This is in August of 2023. And again, like at this point, everyone's saying like, oh, it's all over. Crypto is not actually a thing. And then over here, we have a very tight monthly value area. And that just means the price action was consolidating in the prior month. We got this breakout from the monthly value area. And this is where I got into MicroStrategy. And this one really helped me at the end of the year, where it just had a pretty fantastic run. And yeah, this thing was pretty phenomenal. I didn't end up sticking with it for the entire run. I believe I started piecing out in this base over here, but yeah, really good trade towards the end of the year for anyone that was in the crypto theme.
Yeah, and talk to me a little bit more about the value areas and kind of how you use them. Are they only really for the entries, or do you use them at all for position management as well?
Yeah, so the value areas are fantastic. So it's really just showing you, it's using statistics. So a monthly value area, it's showing you where two-thirds of the trading happened in the prior month. So what I like doing is if something is trading inside of value and then it breaks out from that monthly value area, that's a pretty good entry point for me. And then a lot of times what I'll do is I will use that monthly point of control, which is this line here. That's the most highly traded price of that prior month. I'll use that for a stop a lot of times. But to be honest, like I try to basically like cheat every system. So it's like, hey, I could be using that monthly point of control, but hey, maybe I can get the stop a little bit tighter. So that's kind of what I do. Like there's so many like games within each game. And typically what I'm doing for every trade is I have an indicator that I use and I'm just making sure that whatever amount that I'm risking, that my reward target is at least two times that. So I'm generally going for that 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio.
Yeah,
But
and
you,
yeah, go ahead.
and one other thing, you can also use these if an asset is breaking down as well. So it might be like, oh, it just broke below the monthly value area. You can use that as well. You can do like mean reversion within a value area. There's all different ways you can trade it.
Yeah, and taking a step back, just because a lot of people are curious about this, and I've asked it to other folks as well, who are in the USIC. Do you have a sense of kind of what your win rate is like, your average gain and average loss? Because I think as a position trader, that might provide some really valuable perspective about how you manage things as well.
Yeah, so my win rate for last year was just above 50%. I believe it was like 53%. And then that reward to risk ratio fell just above 2. So that's generally what I like. I've tried going for like a 3-to-1 risk to reward ratio. With that, I find a lot of times I'm getting like battered around, just getting knocked out of every trade. For me, what I would prefer is like I have conviction in the trade. I think it's an A plus setup. I'm being very selective. And then giving it a shot for the 2-for-1. And I always get the question, like, how do you know you're going to be right on that trade? And it's always, I don't know I'm going to be right. Like, I could easily be wrong. And yeah, my results prove that out. I'm only right a little bit more than half the time.
And psychologically, you just kind of have to learn to deal with that this trade could just be a loser, right? You just kind of have to, give it a shot because it matches what you're looking for. The conditions are all right. There's that longer term theme, like you mentioned, with Bitcoin here, and give it your best shot and see what happens.
Exactly. Like at some point, you just have to let it fly. So, like, my approach is always like, here's 10 reasons why I think this thing is gonna go up, and like the technicals are aligning too. But then, it doesn't always work, and you just have to be like, I gave that my best shot. Like that was it. And like, boom, it didn't work. And then just move on to the next one. Like it just happens all the time.
Yeah, and were there any other standout trades for you last year, or maybe one that stands out on the loss side of things to kind of show how you manage risk? Because like we were just talking about, it doesn't always work as you expect.
So I'll show you one of my trades that was probably one of my worst trades last year. This one, Chewy. One of my weaknesses as a trader is I'll try buying things that are in a decline. I'll be thinking that like, okay, it's basing out, it might be starting to move the other way. And I just get hurt doing it. So over time I'm trying to do that less and less. But yeah, for this Chewy trade, this is one like I did some fundamental analysis on this one, whatever you want to call it. And this one, I thought it was entering that basing phase, or maybe this thing might flip to an uptrend. And this is one where I got chopped up a few times trying to trade this one to the upside. And like, as you can see, like it still has not come to life whatsoever. So this was another one where like I had like 10 good reasons why Chewy was going to go up, and like catalysts. A lot of times I like listening to earnings calls for companies too. I just kind of like enjoy it. It's kind of weird, but yeah, listen to the calls, like all that stuff. And yeah, this thing, it just didn't have it in it. So I kept getting chopped up in this thing. But then eventually it's like, you know what? I'm not going to trade this thing anymore. And it happens all the time. Like for me, Chewy's one that didn't work, and you just move on, and then you find another setup that really excites you, and that's basically it.
Yeah, so where was your entry here, and where did you ultimately sell and cut the loss?
Yeah, so for this one, I tried to trade this monthly value where you break out here. And this one, I was like, okay, it's below these longer term moving averages. Like I got to be extra careful. So for this one over here, above this 50-day SMA, I really thought this thing was going to turn and kind of just like sprint into earnings. And I ended up getting hit with this red bar over here, like right into the print. So yeah, this is one where it's like, oh, it looks like it could be turning. And then, yeah, this will happen, 5 times out of 10 or whatever, where it just doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. And going back to actually something you said quite a while ago, during your kind of daily routine, you said, during the evenings you do a lot of research. You mentioned here with Chewy, you looked into the fundamentals. What are you kind of looking for that will entice you and really get you interested into diving deeper into the technicals and maybe, looking for a potential entry point?
Yeah, so it's one of two things. So one, it's either the CAN-SLIM approach, where it's like it's got the accelerating fundamentals, and those can be great trades as well. And then when it comes to these trend reversals, what I'll be looking at is maybe some valuation statistics, and I'll be looking for any changes in that bad narrative. So like for example, I can actually show you, I have a spreadsheet where I look at some fundamentals I can bring up.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, so I have a bunch of different fundamentals that I'm looking at. And like I'll be going into like some deep dives, and I'll look at a bunch of these different metrics together. But I have this cash dashboard. This I find very, very interesting. So PayPal is a stock that I've been trading a bit this year. I've been having some success with it so far. But one thing I like looking at is the cash as a percent of the company's market cap. So like for example, PayPal, they have 13.63% of their market cap holding that in cash. And cash, the way I see it, is like it's basically like the company's holding call options. They could do whatever they want with that cash. If they're good at deploying it, maybe they can make a really good investment. So sometimes I'll be looking at like what is that cash buffer looking at like. It's so like for example, this year I'm watching some of these Chinese companies, because if you look at like Alibaba, it has 21.46% of its market cap in cash. And then from there, I'll be looking at some of these other metrics, like their return on equity, I'll be looking at what is the growth estimate look like, and what is that forward PE. So like for example, when I was looking at PayPal, the theory here is like, okay, they've got a lot of cash. Their gross margins are actually pretty good at 45%. They're generating good free cash flow. Return on equity is pretty decent, but their revenue growth, the estimate's pretty low. So it makes sense. Like, that's why investors don't like it. The growth estimate is very low. For that reason, the forward PE is very low. If we compare it to, say, like Nvidia, which is like, best stock ever, that one has, almost triple the forward PE ratio, which makes perfect sense because it's growing way faster. So if I want to get interested in PayPal from a fundamental side, I would have to think that their revenue growth might pick up. And in the case of PayPal, they just got a new CEO that came in within the past, 3 to 6 months, and they're introducing new growth initiatives to their company. And they're rolling these out pretty much right now. So you start to develop like, hey, maybe there is something here with PayPal. So then like I go over to the chart of PayPal and I started taking a look at this thing. And PayPal, before the market actually just like completely soured on us, I actually traded this monthly value area breakout. Because basically what I'm seeing is, hey, this company whiffed on its earnings. This is another good tell here from the price action. The company didn't do so hot on its earnings report, had a big gap down, but then you can see the following trading session, you see this big green bar. So someone is coming in to buy this thing. So honestly, like I think if you're bullish on this stock, you could even get in like above the prior day's high, then maybe you're using this as your stop. But for my entry, I chose to wait it out a little bit and I entered on this breakout from the monthly value area. So we'll see. Now it's getting very close to its earnings report. So now suddenly I'm going, hey, PayPal, I've done some research on this company. They're rolling out these new growth initiatives. I'm going to watch this one to see if maybe it has a power earnings gap set up. So from there, then you're taking a different setup. So one thing I'm trying to like build into my trading game is like you want trend reversal setups. You want trend continuation setups. You want like event-driven setups. Like you want to have like a, at least for me, like a really well-diversified playbook. And that's what I'm trying to work towards.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. It's cool to see kind of how you look at a company perspective and look at the fundamentals, because my background is very much like CAN-SLIM is the first thing I learned. I didn't really learn, like I know what it is, the forward PE and all that. But my process is much more chart driven first, versus with you, it seems like it's really everything needs to come together, the theme, all that, which is super interesting. I wanted to ask you how, because you just mentioned, the market soured a bit over the past month, but it definitely has. How does market analysis come into your process, and how does that determine whether, you're more aggressive with trading, maybe you handle positions a little bit differently, you take, different sizes. Basically, how do you take into account market analysis, and how do you do it as well to get a sense of what the environment is like?
Yeah, so I have a trend model that I developed, a couple of years back, and that's really what helps me stay on the correct side of the market. And I have it basically goes from like a negative three being like the worst markets in a downtrend to a positive three, which is a really good market and it's in an uptrend. And I developed rules around my behaviors that are allowed when the trend model is at different points. And so these are And this is the trend model, like I said earlier. It's just looking at simple like price and volume indicators and some volatility. And it's generating a score of either plus three all the way down to a negative three. And I recommend for any trader, like it helps to have some sort of like overall market signal. You can use moving averages, whatever you would like. But I just created rules for myself where, like, for example, you can see when the trend model is at a negative three. These are my objectives, financial capital preservation, mental capital preservation, and making process improvements. Like I think this is the best like market season to just start like training, start adding new elements to your game, that sort of thing. Then I have like some exposure rules as well For my maximum amount of long exposure that I'm willing to carry if the trend model's at a negative three. So like for example, what I found is, hey, maybe the trend model's at a negative three, but like maybe I really want to take an oversold bounce trade. I will allow myself to do that, but if it doesn't work, I don't allow myself to just start racking up losing positions. So I try to build into my system ways that I can still cheat my system and I can still, do some things, but there's guardrails for me so I don't, go off the reservation.
I like that, by the way. Screen time low, trading volume low. I like that. That's a nice note to yourself.
Yes, then you can see like it's different. It's basically the flip side if trend model's at a plus three. So that's really my North Star, and that's going to determine like which trading setups do I actually want to use. And then from there, the trend model's really where it begins. And then I'm doing, you can see over here. This is, and what's so cool is like I love building these models. I've been doing these for like 10 years now, so. Yeah, I think most traders, they have like some crazy Excel workbook somewhere or they got a bunch of stuff. And this is mine. So yeah, I'm looking at market breadth right here at the top. I'm looking at all these indices and how they're doing, the volatility for each index. And this is sort of like my canned slim process over here. So I'm looking at momentum in these different, high level index ETFs. I'm looking at sector momentum as well, and I'm ranking these. So, like the cannabis theme, that's a theme that I'm really interested in this year. That one's right at the top. And I don't think most of like the big talking heads in financial media are really even noticing that. So I love to see that sort of thing. And then I'm also looking at style factors in the market. And then I'm looking at countries as well on the international side, looking at bonds. Commodities over here. So yeah, there's a lot in here, but I'm looking at this every single day. So like how I mentioned, I spend maybe like 30 minutes on the open looking at the market. That's where I'm primarily in this worksheet, just kind of assessing the conditions and seeing where there's relative strengths. So like big change for me, Richard, is I noticed today we had a not so good day in the market, but the breadth was not so bad today. So that's a change. So that's something I start to look at and I go, okay, while everyone is starting to freak out, now the breadth is like, improving a little bit. That's something I'm cognizant of.
Yeah, and going down to style factors, is that like growth versus value? What exactly did you do you mean by that right there? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so this is like the momentum style factor has been crushing it year to date. So if we look at the overall markets and like there are be a lot of people that talk about like, oh, it's only a few stocks driving this. Like that is kind of true because it's basically whatever has been running the hardest and the fastest just keeps on advancing. And I've been seeing some statistics as well talking about like market concentration. And the market concentration is very high because like if we look at NVIDIA over the last like four earnings reports, it's just been beat and raise quarter, beat and raise quarter. No one's expecting it. And the thing just continues to run. So I believe that's driving this momentum style factor. I think a big test for the overall market will be when, not if, NVIDIA has an earnings report that the market just goes, eh, we've kind of caught up on this story. So like we're not just going to like ramp NVIDIA 30% on its report this time. That's where we might need some new leaders to emerge. So that's where I get some value. Like it's basically been like momentum and growth that are doing very well so far this year.
Yeah, and you mentioned at the very beginning, how important currencies and interest rates are, and they're huge markets, way bigger than the stock market. How does that kind of drive also your analysis of the market? Do you kind of pay attention to what like TLT is doing, what these different yields, how they're performing? How does that come into play with everything?
Yeah, so this over here talking about currencies and bonds and how they interact with stocks. This is a correlation matrix, and I love keeping tabs on the correlations as well because there's price action and then correlations are like how are these assets moving with each other? So UUP, this is the dollar index ETF. you can see it has a negative correlation with SPY. This is over, it's a 90-day correlation. And you can see, like, if we look at all these other ETFs, they're pretty much positively correlated, right? We see the KWEB has a weaker positive correlation, but you know, from one stock to the next, if the market's going down, they're pretty much all going to be going down.
Right.
So one thing that I look for is, hey, the UUP has this big negative correlation. I like keeping tabs on the dollar index. So let's go over to the DXY. And we can see the dollar index, it's been starting to trend higher. And what's interesting is the market really was not getting very weak in the beginning of this move. So like we had a couple of hot inflation reports and the market kind of like shrugged it off. But recently with this dollar breakout, suddenly it hits this breaking point where, you know, there's that negative correlation, dollar gets too strong and risk assets start to topple over. So a lot of times I'll look at the dollar index and like, for example, let's say the dollar index tomorrow, if we open up tomorrow and the dollar index is down big, and then I also see that stocks are starting to do a little bit better, I'm going to feel a lot more comfortable in that situation than like if the dollar's ripping higher, but like stocks just have like a gap overnight that's higher. So like I kind of use it for context. And then with the bonds as well. So like I'm looking at these 10-year treasury futures. And same thing here. These have been moving with the inflation prints. And what's interesting is stocks can take some bond downside and they won't just immediately flop over. But when these things really start taking it on the chin, you know, we had this breakdown in these ZN futures, then suddenly it was a little bit too much for the stock market. So with these, I actually want to do some more research because when it comes to the correlations, it's not always like, oh, bonds were down today, so that means stocks have to be down. But I think there are certain thresholds where like bonds go down to a certain extent, like that's where it becomes unbearable. So yeah, these are good just for context.
And if you had to kind of condense, which is, I'm sure this is a big ask, but if you had to point to one or two things that a can slim type trader might consider when looking at bonds or interest rates, what would that kind of be, kind of the most helpful things for you and the biggest, I guess, patterns that you see in the relation between growth assets and these symbols?
Yeah, so I think this is something that almost always holds true. If bonds enter into a downtrend, so maybe you use a technical process on the bonds themselves. And if you start to see like a change of character in bonds, that's something that's worth noting. And then maybe you start seeing like, oh, breadth is getting a little bit worse in stocks too. And you know, there's an inflation report coming up like 3 days from now. Like that could be a good signal to you know, back off a little bit. And then this here, Richard, this is just an aside. This was another event-driven trade that I did in 2023. Bill Ackman was like so right on bonds. He shorted bonds and you know, they just kept falling and falling and falling. He was very vocal about it. Bill Ackman controls a lot of capital. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, as everyone gets super bearish on TLT and just bonds in general, Bill Ackman comes out and says, "We covered our bond short." And I immediately put that on my chart. When I see a big headline like that, I just try to put it on my chart. And then you can see, like clockwork, all of a sudden, this thing just puts in its bottom. And I was able to take this one for a trade on that break above the monthly value area. I would say one of my weaknesses is sometimes I'll go straight off the news catalyst and I can get myself into trouble. But what I find that works the best is when you take that news catalyst and, you know, at least for me personally, and then I marry it with the technicals too. I'm sure there's other people that don't even need the news catalyst and they can just rip this thing right off the technicals. And for anyone that does that, like that is awesome. Like I love people like that. So yeah, it's just whatever is your own style.
It seems like that setup, the break above the value area, you use that on a couple of the trades that you've shown today. Is that kind of one of your favorite setups to watch?
That's my favorite setup, yeah. Especially if it's a trend reversal trade, I absolutely love that. Yeah, I think if you're playing for like a trend continuation, I think that like the Mark Minervini VCP pattern, like it's just untouchable. It's so tough to beat that. If you're looking at a stock that's in a really good uptrend, you're looking for a continuation, that's got to be the go-to. But yeah, if you're looking for a trend reversal, I find like for me personally, some sort of news catalyst or something usually helps. And then yeah, that breakout from the monthly value where you're like not rushing it and actually waiting for some sort of technical confirmation.
And looking back at last year, did you focus at all on the AI semiconductor theme at all, or were you mostly focused on the other ones that you kind of mentioned previously?
No, so I completely botched the AI theme. So like Nvidia, this is one where the news catalyst came and went, and this was one where just kind of missed the trade. And yeah, this one just had like every good technical indication,
Break above value
fantastic
there.
break above value. It had, the great fundamentals. And sometimes you just miss it. Like for a trade like this, it broke out, and I was like, okay, let me try to catch this one on a pullback. And it just didn't happen. And then for this one as well, like I tried trading this one for, I was like, okay, I missed the trade. So, hey, it's going parabolic. So let me try for like a parabolic short setup. I tried that a few times. I ended up having losers on those. So, yeah, I would say the AI theme with Nvidia, I just missed it. And what's interesting is like there's a lot of like excellent traders that are really good at Can Slim, where this like made their trading year and they just crushed it with it. But for every one of those, there's going to be like the other 9 out of 10 traders that also missed it. And like what I try to impart on people is like, you can miss the best trades in the market and you can still do well. And like what I love about trading, and maybe this is like going back to sports, is you always get another try at it. So like I would never be like, oh man, I missed that one, because there's going to be another Nvidia and then like another one right after. And like they just keep coming. So as long as you learn something from it, then like you just keep playing the game, and eventually another one will come up and you'll smash that one.
Yep. And yeah, like you said, even if you miss, the Can Slim leader from last year, you can still have a triple digit year, and you're proof of that right there. So no, that's awesome. And looking back at last year, were there any other kind of key takeaways, key lessons that you learned from the experience, being in the contest as well? How was that kind of overall competing against everybody?
Yeah, so I found I used to do this when I would play tennis. I would look at everyone's like national ranking, and I would look at all their prior matches and whatever, and you can really psych yourself out. I noticed same thing with a competition like the USIC. If you're looking at how everyone's doing and like you start to play that game, then it could be a hindrance. So like for this, I learned from tennis to not do that. So for me, it's really just like play your own game. Play your own game, because in trading, like in tennis, you have an opponent that's trying to beat you, that they can mess with you and they can change things. But for trading, there is no opponent. Like it is just you. So there's almost no point in even like looking at the leaderboard or anything like that. So that's really like a key for me, just to like do my own thing and try to do my best. And like if I focus on like what we talked about earlier, taking less trades, being more selective, not making some big mistakes, like don't enter stocks in like, big downtrends, like stuff like that, things will work out and I'll probably end up getting a good result. So yeah, that's really my mindset. Like I want to be consistent, and my goal is to, just keep going. And maybe one time is lucky, but then maybe if you get two times, maybe less lucky, three and four and five. So like I want to keep going for the long term.
Yeah, and like going back to the very beginning of what you said a while ago, if you can be profitable 4 out of 5 years, and maybe one of those 4 years you really nail it, that's going to lead to really good performance over time, and that's what we're going for. So, perfect. Andrew, kind of taking a step back again for everybody watching, especially considering kind of the struggles that you've had, and kind of how you've been turning it around and having a tremendous year last year. What kind of general advice would you have for traders watching this, to both, inspire them as well as maybe help them, through, the struggles that we all experience as traders?
Yeah, I would say it is definitely possible, but you really have to love trading. If you are in this for money, like you're, it's just not going to work out. So you have to have like a very low time preference. The money really has to be like the last concern for you. Like if your personal finances are not well taken care of, this game's going to be almost impossible for you. Like even if you look at Warren Buffett lives a very conservative lifestyle. He doesn't have like a crazy mansion and like a Bugatti and all this stuff. And he's arguably the best in this game. And I don't think that is a coincidence. So it's all about just taking pressure off of yourself in any way that you can because you want to survive. Like this is a war of attrition. You have to survive. If you can survive, then you can start to put the whole package together. So it's going to take a couple of years in order to be able to do that, but it's possible. And then I think golden rules I would tell almost everyone is, take your trading volume, cut it in half, and take your screen time and then cut that in half as well. And you should be good.
Yeah, great, Andrew. This has been really fun. I think a lot of key takeaways for everybody watching. Hopefully for all of you out there, if you enjoyed this, please leave a like down below, subscribe if you're new to the channel. Yeah, we really appreciate all of you guys watching, especially if you're watching all the way to the end. Make sure you comment below, maybe a question for Andrew that you have. Andrew, where can people learn more from you? Where can they reach out to you if they want to learn more about your process?
Yeah, so my entire process is happening on Substack. So it's pristinecapital.substack.com. I productized it. All of my evening research is going into that nightly research note that I put out. All of the morning analysis I do, all of these models. So definitely check that out, pristinecapital.substack.com. There's a free version as well. And then I'm also on Twitter. So at realpristinecap, you can check that out. We can interact. And best of luck out there, everyone.
Yeah, thanks again, Andrew. We'll have those links down below. Really appreciate you coming on, and hopefully everybody watching got at least one good golden nugget out of this, which I'm sure, I did. I'm sure the value area is very interesting. All your process looking into the fundamentals, adding that to the Cancelm approach, the technical approach, really interesting. So thanks again for coming on, and we'll see everybody in future videos. Take care.